start by reading the first line, first verse of 277, which I thought I had marked. I think of this song often when I get up to preach, and it's right in line with what I want to speak about this morning. 277, speak, O Lord, as we come to you, to receive the food of your holy word. Take your truth, plant it deep in us. Shape and fashion us in your likeness, that the light of Christ might be seen today in our acts of love and our deeds of faith. Speak, O Lord, and fulfill in us all your purposes for your glory. The hope, my intention, whenever I speak before you, is that it not be about me, that the Lord would speak to us all. It's a blessing to be able to preach here and with you all. I've been doing that, it's almost 4 years now. Can you believe that? 4 years that we've lived here and been blessed to work with you all. I've been preaching for about 10 years, and sometimes I forget. It's just a little bit weird. I don't know what it's like to sit and have to listen to me every Sunday. But it's a blessing to be able to speak to you all, new Christians, people who are much more mature in the faith than I am, and to study together is just a blessing. So thank you for that opportunity. It just so happens that the next 3 Sundays, I'll experience a different blessing, and that is that I'll be out of town and be able to sit with my family during the sermon. I don't think they're going to ask me to preach. So, and then it's the 2 Sundays after I get back, we have got 2 guest speakers, and I'll be able to be blessed and sit with them for 2 more Sundays after that. So we all get to hear someone else talk for the next 3 weeks. All right, all of that to say, to get us into the lesson here. Finished up our Psalms series from the Psalms of Ascents. So what are we talking about today? If you would, go ahead and say this with me. We've been doing this as periodically through the year, several sermons on this theme of setting our hearts to know the Lord. So from Ezra 7:10, if you're comfortable, would you read this with me? For Ezra had set his heart to study the law of the Lord and to do it and to teach his statutes and rules in Israel. Thank you. So we've been focusing, having some themes on this, lessons from this idea of setting our hearts to know the Lord. And Ezra, as an example of this, is studying the law of the Lord, and he's doing it and teaching it. And in that order, you know, he's studying it for himself, he's following it himself, and he's going and sharing that with others. And here in this last leg of the year on this theme, I want to introduce this idea of him setting his heart to teach. He set his heart to study, to do, and he set his heart to teach. What drove Ezra to teach? Whatever it was, it's clear as you read Ezra and Nehemiah where he shows up that he is indeed driven to teach. And you get the sense that it is something that comes from his heart, from deep within him as a person who loves the Lord. The basic point I want to make this morning is that a heart driven to teach is one that is seeking to reach hearts. If it's coming from the heart, then it's aimed toward hearts as well. And so there'll be lots of little points and little applications along the way, but that's my main focus this morning, that teachers teach from the heart and teaching the Word of God, and we're seeking to reach hearts. And that frame of mind is going to affect a number of things in a good way. And so that's the focus of this lesson, but the lessons that will be on the theme for the remainder of the year will be focused on this idea of teaching. So first of all, we see with Ezra that he is a person who's been given much by God. Ezra chapter 7 and verse 25, and I'll be going to a number of verses. I guess when you hear my pages turning, you know you have time to turn there too. Ezra 7, oh boy, talking too much. Ezra 7, verse 10, or verse 25. I'm sorry, I keep saying 2 different verses, don't I? 7, verse 25. And you, Ezra, this is the king of Persia speaking to Ezra, and you, Ezra, according to the wisdom of your God that is in your hand, appoint magistrates and judges who may judge all the people in the province beyond the river. All such as know the laws of your God, and those who do not know them, you shall teach. So the thing I'm going to highlight here for now is that this is according to the wisdom of Ezra's God. And the king of Persia isn't in the know about everything, but he's right about that. That what Ezra has is wisdom, the wisdom that is because of the God he follows. As according to the God he follows. And so Ezra had set his heart to teach. What has God given you? If he's given you spiritual wisdom, what are you going to do with that? What are you going to do in sharing that with others? We'll talk about the nature of teaching and different degrees and roles of teaching in another lesson. But you know that in talking about teaching, that I'm seeking to include as many of us as possible in its application. So what has God given you in regards to spiritual wisdom? He has given it to you. And if he's given it to you, what are you doing with that? Ezra, with that, set his heart to share that, to teach others. I've seen people who have been Christians for years and who have never ventured to teach anyone else. Why is that? Is it humility? They don't want to put themselves out there and promote themselves. Well, no, I wasn't talking about promoting ourselves. We're talking about giving what God has given us, sharing what God has given. And so that is not by any means about us. So it's not humility that would keep someone from sharing what God has given them. Maybe we protect ourselves, not risking anything by putting ourselves out there to teach others. But in so doing, we also are failing to advance the cause of Christ and the opportunities God has given us to step up and share what we have with others, declaring the message of God and its application to others. The fourth quarter adult class, Wednesday nights, if I got all that right, it will be all different men volunteering or talking to Scott, I guess, and arranging to share a lesson or two or class period or so. And I understand that the slots haven't all been filled yet. I encourage you, if you were on the edge of, hey, maybe I could sign up to do something, I encourage you to talk to Scott and let this be the nudge, this lesson to be the nudge, maybe to take that more seriously. All of us taught the first time sometime. And so I encourage you to take the opportunity if you are inclined to do so. He's given what from God what he has, and he shares with others. And then that he teaches with compassion. He's teaching from the heart, and so he's teaching with love and compassion, is what Ezra's doing in the book of Ezra. This really isn't truly a study of the book of Ezra, but Ezra has obviously been an example on this theme. So chapter 9, verses 1 through 5, there's a whole lot going on here, but you'll see his heart for people, even broken and sinful people. Ezra 9, verse 1. After these things had been done, the officials approached me and said, "The people of Israel and the priests and Levites have not separated themselves from the peoples of the lands with their abominations, from the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Perizzites, the Jebusites, the Ammonites, the Moabites, the Egyptians, and the Amorites. For they have taken some of their daughters to be wives for themselves and for their sons, so that the holy race has mixed itself with the people of the lands. And in this faithlessness, the hand of the officials and chief men has been foremost. As soon as I heard this, I tore my garment and my cloak and pulled my hair from my head and beard and sat appalled. And then all who trembled at the words of God of Israel because of the faithlessness of the returned exiles gathered around me while I sat appalled until the evening sacrifices. And at the evening sacrifice, I arose from my fasting with my garment and my cloak torn and fell upon my knees and spread out my hands to the Lord my God." And we read a prayer, which we'll revisit another time. He tears his clothes, but he's genuinely torn inside. And he leads others to mourn this wrongdoing. And then in chapter 10, verses 1 through 6, while Ezra prayed and made confession, weeping and casting himself down before the house of God, a very great assembly of men, women, and children gathered to him out of Israel, for the people wept bitterly. And Shechaniah, the son of Jehiel, the son of Elam, addressed Ezra, "We have broken faith with our God and have married foreign women from the peoples of the land, but even now there is hope for Israel in spite of this. Therefore let us make a covenant with our God to put away all these wives and their children, according to the counsel of my Lord and of those who tremble at the commandment of our God, and let it be done according to the law. Arise, for it is your task. We are with you. Be strong and do it." And Ezra arose and made the leading priests and Levites and all Israel take an oath that they would do as had been said. So they took the oath. Then Ezra withdrew from before the house of God and went to the chamber of Jehohanan, the son of Eliashib, where he spent the night neither eating bread nor drinking water, for he was mourning over the faithlessness of the exiles. We happened to touch on this issue in class, but the basic sin here isn't just marrying foreigners here for Israel, but it's marrying pagans. And the people were tempted to do that to find security in the nations around them, especially the leaders, to find security in those kinds of connections. And so they've compromised their devotion to the Lord and seeking these other connections and marrying these pagan women. And so Ezra is torn over this, and he's mourning before God, confessing sin, grieved over the faithlessness of Israel. He cares. He is deeply affected here. Jesus also clearly taught about compassion as a crucial part of our teaching. I'm not going to turn there right now, but I'll refer to Jesus' feeding of the 5,000. 5,000 really plus, because it's 5,000 men. But in Mark 6 and other Gospels, but especially in Mark 6, we're told about how the disciples had been doing work. They came to Jesus, and it was hard to find a break, time to rest in any way, and Jesus takes them aside. Hey, let's go take a break. Let's rest. But when they arrive on the other side of the sea, where they're supposed to take a break, there's yet more and more people there. Thousands of people coming to hear teaching. And rather than say, hey, sorry, we're on vacation, we're taking a break, Jesus looks at them as sheep without a shepherd, and he has compassion for them. Later they'll be hungry, but that's not what drove him to compassion. It was that they were like sheep without a shepherd. They didn't have the teaching they needed, and he goes and he teaches them. And then the food that they give is an image of is to help teach the disciples of what it means to teach. Because then he feeds the 5,000, but he gives the bread to the disciples to distribute to the people, which is what they'll be doing for the rest of their lives in terms of teaching. Compassionately giving of themselves, even when they're tired, even when they're worn out, to continue giving of themselves and to continue teaching and providing for others. So Jesus had the compassion, and he taught his disciples to have that compassion. If you haven't read it in the way I've just described it, I encourage you to go back and read and think about the bread, which they literally gave, miraculously gave, but think about it in terms of the teaching that Jesus was trying to teach his disciples to exhibit. The nature of the very message that we're giving to each other and to others determines the motivation. Sometimes we lose sight of the motivation, perhaps. But what even brought us to the goodness of the message in the first place? But the fact that the Lord has given himself for us, has saved us from our sins, has redeemed us and given us an eternal hope. What's going to bring us to teach others but that we can give that same hope to them? So, to have a teacher's heart, we were driven from the heart to genuinely bring the good news to each other and to others. I'm sorry that I have not kept up here quite with the slides. But as we're teaching from the heart, so we're also reaching hearts. And that's the aim, as we share the truth with each other and with others. Again, thinking of Ezra, chapter 7, verse 25, again. What is he tasked to do? And you, Ezra, according to the wisdom of your God that is in your hand, appoint magistrates and judges who may judge all the people in the province beyond the river, all such as know the laws of your God, and those who do not know them you shall teach. There's a little bit of ambiguity, and depending on your version, the way to take it. But it looks like he's teaching judges, and he's teaching the people that will be judged, the people who are the basic citizenry, that the people need to be informed about the law. You'll teach the people who know the law, and you'll teach the people, and if those who should know the law don't, well, you need to teach them too. They all need to know God's law. And so he's not just tasked to spout ideas, to post laws in the land. He is there to teach people. To teach people. Reaching people. And that focus is a little different than just studying ideas and putting abstract ideas out there into the air, but actually trying to reach specific people. Intentional teaching, conscious of the audience, directed. And I'm saying this, but I've not mastered it. It's something we are always seeking to grow in. Understand, the gospel is the gospel. The message of God is the message of God, right? It's unchanging in a very important sense, right? So why would we be concerned about reaching specific people? You know, just say the message, and whoever gets it, gets it. But when you have a focus on hearts, and focus on people, the essence of the message doesn't change, but the way it's communicated is thoughtful of the people and who they are and where they are and what they need. We don't deliver canned messages, canned answers to life's questions and problems, but thoughtful about where people are and what they need. Never compromising the gospel in that effort. There's some essential truths, aren't there, about Christ and Him crucified. But the cross that a people need to bear isn't the same in every circumstance. Think about what we have in Scripture. Does the message change in the form that it takes? Even one person. Take Paul. We have a lot written from Paul, right? Why do we have Romans and Galatians and the others? Like, there's similar problems going on in Rome and in Galatia. Some overlap. Definitely the gospel is going to be the answer in both cases, and yet we have unique books with unique emphases and points given to different people with a different tone because of where they are and how they're approaching God. The message is the same. The gospel is uncompromised, but he's thinking about who these people are and what their problem is and what they need, how the gospel comes to bear specifically for them. So be thoughtful. You may get used to thinking about a certain problem, certain question, a challenge to Christianity, or just a conundrum in applying Christian principles. You may be used to an answer that just hit right for you, and someone said it a way that you find helpful, and so you say it that way that you found helpful, and you might not realize there might be other ways to put it that might be helpful to others. And it'd be frustrating sometimes when people don't get it. Like, man, why don't you get it the way I'm getting it right now? But maybe you just need to be thoughtful about how they're taking it and the way they're understanding it, and to seek to be clear in delivering the message. So say what is needed in a way that can be heard. When we're aiming at hearts as well, it means we're going deeper than just getting people in an outward way to conform to the religion. Plan on preaching lessons from 1 Timothy, but let's go ahead and read 1 Timothy 1:5, and we'll be able to flesh this out more at another time. 1 Timothy 1, verse 5. As Paul, the apostle, writes to a teacher, Timothy, "The aim of our charge is love that issues from a pure heart and a good conscience, and a sincere faith. Obviously, Paul, Timothy, they need to have all that love and issuing from a pure heart and everything. But I think he's actually saying that it's also for the people we teach, the charge we're giving to others, the teaching we're giving to others, the aim in them as well is love that issues from a pure heart. That's from the inside out, a good conscience and a sincere faith. Ezra exemplifies that. He isn't just going around trying to teach people a form to keep. You know, he's sent, in a manner of speaking, he's sent to revitalize the temple. He brings finances for the temple. He brings teaching about how to run the temple. And he could have just stopped there and said, "Looks great, guys." But he saw the rot and the hypocrisy in the people and among the leaders and priests who were sinning. And he went deeper. Previous leaders obviously had neglected that. They had been content, if even, with the forms, but not with genuine, sincere faith. He cares about securing their complete devotion here. Of course, that has always been God's aim, to reach hearts. God is not saying that new in the New Testament. That should be evident in Ezra as well. But in Matthew 5, let's go ahead and read that. Obviously, the whole Sermon on the Mount is really what I want to allude to. One of the key things about that is how Jesus emphasizes getting it to the heart of things and examining our hearts here. But let's just look at one example, Matthew 5, verse 21. "You have heard that it was said to those of old, 'You shall not murder,' and whoever murders will be liable to judgment. But I say to you that everyone who is angry with his brother will be liable to judgment. Whoever insults his brother will be liable to the council. And whoever says, 'You fool,' will be liable to the hell of fire." And Jesus keeps doing this with various laws, right? Don't commit adultery. You look at a woman with lustful intent, and you've committed adultery in your heart. The bar isn't just on these extreme actions, but it's the sin in our hearts. That's what God has been after. Clearly Jesus teaches that, but it's not new in the New Testament. Okay, Jesus isn't saying, "You know, I'm here to announce a change, a program change here, that now God is wanting our hearts." No, he's always wanted our hearts. In Deuteronomy 6, if you'd like to read that together, Deuteronomy 6, and you can go. Deuteronomy impressed that upon me when I studied that the first time. The first several chapters really helped to see that God has been after the whole person. And 6, 4 through 9 is probably most clear among those. "Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, and with all your soul, and with all your might. And these words that I command you today shall be on your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your children, and shall talk of them when you sit in your house, and when you walk by the way, and when you lie down, and when you rise. You shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be as frontlets between your eyes. You shall write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates." Friends of ours bought a house that came with phylacteries built in. You know what that is? You know, there's this little gem-covered thing on their doorpost on the inside between the screen door and the main door. And I never read what's in there, but apparently there's just a little scroll of scriptures. Now, anyone could have bought that house and couldn't care less, you know, what actually was in there. I never bothered to ever read the scriptures. And that's not what God isn't just saying, "I just want you to just post scriptures everywhere." But to the end that you internalize those. The aim in the Even under the law of Moses, God's aim has always been that it be written on our hearts, that we would seek him. He didn't have to say all these things, all your heart, with all your soul, with all your might. That's what God has been after all along. Of course, sin ought to give us a hint that God is after the whole heart, because sin is not just a matter of our outward action, but of our hearts. And so Genesis 6, where sin is at such heights that God is going to destroy the world with the flood. This is how it's put in Genesis 6, verse 5. Then the Lord saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every intention of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. And the Lord regretted that he had made man on the earth, and it grieved him to his heart. Man's heart was just so full of sin. So is it going to solve anything if God says, well, let me just, you know, make sure they act okay, that the things that I see them doing all look okay? Obviously, God is reaching hearts and needing to redeem hearts from the inside out. Of course, God, as the great teacher, is driven from the heart as well, as he is grieved to his heart over our sin. When we effectively teach and reach hearts, we're also creating people who themselves take ownership of the message we're giving them. This is about equipping others with the truths of Scripture, to be able to discern those truths for themselves, and then, again, to share that with others. Found this interesting in Nehemiah chapter 8, where Ezra shows up again there. Nehemiah 8, verses 13 through 15. Just thinking about how the people become equipped to share this this information that they learn. Nehemiah 8, verse 13. On the second day, the heads of the fathers' houses of all the people, with the priests and Levites, came together to Ezra the scribe in order to study the words of the law. So they're gathering to Ezra to study the words of the law. Verse 14, and they found it written in the law that the Lord had commanded by Moses that the people of Israel should dwell in booths during the feast of the seventh month, and that they should proclaim it and publish it in all their towns and in Jerusalem, go out to the hills and bring branches of olive, wild olive, myrtle, palm, and other leafy trees to make booths, as it is written. How is Ezra going to teach the people to observe the Feast of Booths? I mean, he could have just sent out a decree, said, we got to do this. But the people gather to Ezra, and they don't just talk to Ezra. They go to the law of the Lord. I don't think Ezra discovered this here. If what we read in Ezra 7 verse 10 is true, that Ezra had set his heart to study the law of the Lord, I don't think he's like, oh, whoa, there's a whole other feast here I didn't know about. No, I think he knew. But they come together, they study it, they learn of it, and surely of its significance and its proper observance, and they go and are equipped then to proclaim that to the people. I think we should take that same kind of approach. When we're teaching people, I mean, don't you appreciate when people do this for you? Let's look at the scriptures together on this issue. Let's let God be the one who speaks. Let our interpretations, our opinions take second position there, second place, but really listen to God. And what does God have to say? Well, are you saying that, doesn't matter what I'm saying, what do you think God is saying here? They look at the word and are equipped. Ephesians 4, I won't turn there right now, but Ephesians 4, 11 and 12 are a key verse for me on this. But God has given various teachers and various roles to equip the saints, to equip the saints. And so, building discernment among God's people that we can all learn to read the word and share it with ours, apply it ourselves and share it with others, to help build that muscle, that spiritual muscle in us all, discern what's right. in any form of teaching that you've done, even if it's just teaching your kids, you know, some simple task, don't you love the light bulb moments? Isn't that exciting? And those of you who do teach for a living, isn't that like, wow, that you can live for that? But that light bulb moment, let that characterize the whole of what we're doing. That it's not just when I'm in a Bible study with someone and they say, oh, like, that's obviously a wonderful moment. Now I see what God is saying about this issue. But that our whole life should be the new day dawning. I think that's what Peter's talking about in 2 Peter 1. And that Christ, as the rising sun, is dawning in our hearts. Very beautiful picture there, and the truth expressed by that picture. All right, 2 Peter 1. Oh, you know, I have it on my outline already, so. 2 Peter 1, verse 19. And we have the prophetic word more fully confirmed, to which you will do well to pay attention as to a lamp shining in a dark place until the day dawns and the morning star arises in your hearts. That's what's happening for us throughout our lives as disciples. And then we get to see happen in others as we teach others. The morning star, which Jesus is often called that. I think that's probably the picture here. But Christ is shining more and more clearly for us as we grow in him. The light bulb moment never ends until we see Christ. If we're reaching hearts, one more note on that, and I'll shift to a final major point, but one more note on applying this part. If we're really reaching hearts, it's what the aim really is, then we need to be praying for people. If we're giving thought to how to teach them, we better be praying. And so Colossians 1, verses 9 and 10, Paul, this is not the only place you see this. You see this in a number of letters from Paul. But Colossians 1, verse 9. And so from the day we heard, we have not ceased to pray for you, asking that you may be filled with the knowledge of his will and all spiritual wisdom and understanding, so as to walk in a manner worthy of the Lord, fully pleasing to him, bearing fruit in every good work and increasing in the knowledge of God. We have all these prayers from Paul for all these different churches. And he doesn't just say, and I'm going to write this to them, and I want it to sound good, so I want to tell them how I prayed for them. So let me just say a quick prayer and then write this to them so I can tell them how I've been praying for them. No, I'm sure that he has been habitually, as he says, has been praying for them and always asking these things for them. We've got how many kids' classes, you know, adult classes and studies and people we're trying to influence and reach in the world. Are we praying? We're praying. We got a new quarter coming up. I'll be teaching some kids. Am I praying for them? Let's name them and pray for them as we prepare for those things. All right, the last major point here, the focus for the remainder of the lesson here. As we highlight the role of the teacher and the one taught, I don't want us to forget. I am behind here. I could see the next slide too, and sometimes I forget the next slide isn't the one you're seeing already. Maybe I need to change that setting. But this is for God's glory. We're from our hearts to the hearts of others, but this is really about the Lord from beginning to end. And if we're going to effectively teach people, rightly teach people, the only way to be faithful to that is if it's all about God's glory and not our own. And so Galatians 1, it's one place to highlight that. Because there was a temptation in the churches in Galatia to compromise the truth of Scripture out of pressure from others to please others. But we need to make sure it's all about the Lord. So, Galatians 1, verse 10. For am I now seeking the approval of man or of God? Or am I trying to please man? If I were still trying to please man, I would not be a servant of Christ. For I would have you know, brothers, that the gospel that was preached by me is not man's gospel. for I did not receive it from any man, nor was I taught it, but I received it through revelation of Jesus Christ. This has got to be about what we've gotten from the Lord, what we're delivering to others. Not about me, not about making other people happy. Or we'll all be lost if that's our motive. And the news that we're declaring, the news that we're spreading, the aim of spreading that is obviously to save souls, but then for them to praise and serve the Lord, to bring glory to God's name. That's the goal here. A number of passages we can look at, but I'll just read these off here. Romans 1, verse 5. Through whom we have received grace and apostleship to bring about the obedience of faith for the sake of his name among all the nations. And then Ephesians 3, verse 7 through 10. Of this gospel I was made a minister according to the gift of God's grace, which was given me by the working of his power. To me, though I am the very least of all the saints, this grace was given to preach to the Gentiles the unsearchable riches of Christ, and to bring to light for everyone what is the plan of the mystery hidden for ages in God, who created all things, so that through the church the manifold wisdom of God might now be made known to the rulers and authorities in the heavenly places. We want to show God's wisdom to others, and for others to come to know it for themselves. And finally, recognizing God as the teacher, the great teacher, he teaches from his heart to reach hearts. And I want to look at Jeremiah 31 for this. There are puzzling aspects about this passage, but I want to highlight one element that I think helps explain a lot of this. The nature of the Old Covenant versus the New Covenant and what it did for the people. What's different? Chapter 31, verse 31. Behold, the days are coming, declares the Lord, when I will make a new covenant with the house of Israel and the house of Judah. Not like the covenant that I made with their fathers on the day when I took them by the hand to bring them out of the land of Egypt, my covenant that they broke, though I was their husband, declares the Lord. For this is the covenant that I will make with the house of Israel after those days, declares the Lord. I will put my law within them, and I will write it on their hearts. I will be their God, and they shall be my people. And no longer shall each one teach his neighbor and each his brother, saying, Know the Lord, for they shall all know me. From the least of them to the greatest, declares the Lord, for I will forgive their iniquity, and I will remember their sin no more. If I'm understanding this correctly, God is saying, you broke my covenant, right? Jeremiah writing the time when God has removed Israel from the land, because after generations of breaking his covenant, he has cut them off for a time, sent them into captivity. So God's saying, I sent you out of the land, I destroyed the temple because you persistently broke my covenant. You always needed to be led by the hand, always inclined to turn aside. But this new covenant would be different. God's aim has never changed, but the effectiveness of the law that God provided, there are reasons God gave the law he did, but the effectiveness of that law reaching hearts is what's different. He's going to reach their hearts. It would be written on their hearts. He would be their God, and we would be his people. You wouldn't have to plead with each other constantly to know the Lord, because as if to coax them into it, because they will have already had that instilled within them, deep within them. So what's different? Well, obviously, the difference is God has come down in the form, in the flesh. Christ gave himself, died for us, and conquered death. He's taught us and reached us like no one ever could have imagined. Rejected by us and yet dying for us. What a teacher. He's completely given himself. He didn't just stay, you know, at the feeding of 5,000, stay after needing a break and still teach people. He went all the way to the cross for us. That reaches us. That has reached us. So remember that. Remember how he's reached you, and think about that when you teach others, whether it's young people here, others in the world, whatever form that takes. Remember how God has reached you and put the cross in front of others as well. And so may God's hand be on us as it was on Ezra. May God help us to teach from our hearts, and may God open the hearts of those we teach. And may we continually pray, "Speak, O Lord," that he would speak through us. Thank you.